This is an ABC podcast.
Did you hear the science show last week on designer bodies? There was the legendary Fiona Wood from Perth talking about spray-on skin. Gordon Wallace from Wollongong on 3D printing of body organs like ears, bones and even bits of brains. It's worth listening to. And it's still downloadable. Ethics came up, of course, such as the affordability. Who can pay for the frontline treatments these days? And where will it all lead? Today, Associate Professor Megan Munsey looks to the future. She's Head of Education, Ethics and Community Awareness at Stem Cells Australia and has done pioneering work on stem cells themselves and embryos.
Right now, while you're sitting there, your stem cells in the bone marrow are busy making over 1 billion red blood cells a minute. The stem cells in the lining of your gut are replacing the cells that you shed each day. Again, over 1 billion cells. Without those stem cells, your gut would not be intact. You would certainly wouldn't be healthy. So it's all because stem cells have this unique ability to be able to copy themselves over again and again and again, as well as the potential to give rise to a specialist cell, a specialist daughter cell that has a particular function. In the lab, we can also make a really primitive type of stem cell from an early embryo, or even trick a body cell, like a skin cell or a blood cell, to go backwards along the developmental pathway and turn back into a really primitive embryonic-like stem cell. These pluripotent stem cells share the ability to copy themselves, just like the cells in your organs, but they can also be coaxed in the lab to grow into a particular and large range of cells, much more diverse than those stem cells that are in your organs. This has opened up a whole new way of thinking about medical research and how we can use stem cells. But of course, it's the possibility that cells can replace damaged and diseased cells that's captured the imagination, perhaps of you, certainly of me and many scientists, but also has provided hope for patients, their families and friends the world over. You might know someone who's had leukemia and whose health has been improved following a bone marrow transplant. Or perhaps someone who's had a skin graft after a severe burn. In both cases, it's the potential of stem cells that's been harnessed within those organs to treat the disease. While such treatments have been available for decades, other stem cell applications remain experimental. Hundreds of clinical trials are being conducted around the world to evaluate whether a new stem cell-based approach is safe and effective. Perhaps last month you read about the promising results from a clinical trial conducted by the London Project to Cure Blindness. There were just two patients in this trial. It's an early trial, but it was quite remarkable. These patients suffered from macular degeneration. In this condition, the retina ceases to work. One of the reasons why the retina is not working well is the cells that underlie the retina are not functioning. This group, and as I mentioned, other groups, are trying a new strategy. They're making those replacement cells that lie under the retina in the lab from stem cells. They then, as they described in this paper, use a fancy band-aid from these cells and slide it behind the retina. So in these two patients, they had improved sight. But doing this research also showed that, as you can imagine, that's a really delicate bit of surgery and it has a high risk of detaching the retina and actually leading to or advancing the blindness. Other stem cell groups are looking at how to use stem cells to make replacement cells like dopaminergic nerves from stem cells to treat Parkinson's patients, or testing whether a small cassette that contains cells, again, made from stem cells, but that can make insulin and slide that cassette under the skin for patients with diabetes to see whether it can control their blood glucose levels. Others have harnessed the potential of stem cells in your organs, in your heart, in your brain, and see if you can kind of coax them out of hibernation and into action to repair damaged and diseased tissue. As you can imagine, this research and these approaches are based on years and years of work, years of knowledge, years of thinking. They represent a sophisticated, possible solution to complex problems. And it'll be many years before we're able to really see whether these approaches are going to deliver on the promise of stem cells and deliver a safe and effective treatment. However, beyond the realm of this kind of science, there is a growing commercial stem cell industry, founded not on evidence, not on science, but on the promise of success. One typical ad that appeared in Australian newspapers tantalisingly asks, what if your body had a reset button that you could press and all your cells could regenerate reverse wear and tear? Who wouldn't want that? The ad went on to imply that this one magical treatment could be used to help patients suffering from lung disease, multiple sclerosis, erectile dysfunction, diabetes, cancer, spinal cord injury, heart, liver, kidney disease. Such inflated and simplistic claims of benefit are also evident online. Clinic websites are peppered with claims such as revolutionary stem cell treatment, already helped thousands of patients, no negative effects. In lieu of scientific evidence, these providers rely heavily on patient testimonials to attract potential customers. While they may use the language of science, the sentiment, the rhetoric of science, what's on offer is effectively a trade in hope. For those suffering from currently incurable conditions who feel as though that they have nothing to lose, these marketing messages are hard to ignore. And the request for a fee may seem a small price to pay. Indeed, when we spoke to Australian patients who had sought treatment or contemplated doing so as part of a large sociology study on stem cell tourism, many commented that the worst that could happen is that they could lose their money. Risk was perceived as financial loss, and stem cells viewed as something that they needed to try so as to ensure they had exhausted all options, left no stone unturned. While a completely understandable response, the idea that stem cell-based therapies, even when you use your own cells, are without risk, is an alarming proposition to my colleagues and I. I'd like to revisit that application of macular degeneration and stem cells that I mentioned earlier. As I said, this is being applied, or was applied by this one group, but also by several others. It remains extremely experimental. It remains with obvious risks I described. However, perhaps buoyed by the coverage of these trials, three women in Florida recently attended a clinic, a stem cell clinic, where they paid to have what was claimed to be stem cells harvested from their fat via liposuction and injected under the retina. So very different types of cells that I talked about earlier. And not just one eye, both eyes on the same day. At least one woman thought she was enrolling in a clinical trial because she had actually found this clinic via a government website that promoted clinical research. Unfortunately, all three women were rendered blind quite swiftly, and the complications here were because of the procedure. The cells themselves hadn't grown and detached the retina, but the quite aggressive procedure, highly invasive procedure, had caused the detachment and other complications. Closer to home, we've seen the death of a woman following complications of liposuction. This occurred in Sydney. Her husband sought treatment for her advanced dementia from a stem cell clinic. It was claimed that stem cells, again isolated from her fat and injected back into her body through an IV drip, would be able to provide an effective treatment for dementia, or at least worth a try. At the coroner's inquest, the report states that this fatal stem cell treatment had all the hallmarks of quack medicine. So what can we do about the stem cell treatment mirage? The stem cell community needs to be frank about where we're at. We need to share our excitement about genuine progress that has been made in medical research, and there are some fine examples. But we also need to be clear that we're not there yet. We're not yet at a stage where we can offer safe and effective treatments beyond the use of stem cells for diseases of the blood system and for skin grafts and other applications that I've already mentioned. We must insist that regulators ensure clinics practice evidence-based medicine and certainly require that they show that the treatments work and are safe before they're sold. This needs to be done no matter the unmet need. We need to ask questions about the competency motivation and conflicts of interest of those who are offering these commercial treatments. And of course, we need to also arm those who are seeking for a solution to be aware of some of these limitations, perhaps to be cautious. Where a treatment is not part of a clinical trial, is being offered by someone who is not a specialist, appears to offer the same treatment for a vast array of unrelated conditions, and the patient is being asked to pay for a treatment that is not recognised by Medicare or health insurers, people need to think twice. The future of stem cell science does offer hope, but simply being enthusiastic is not enough. We must insist that evidence underpins progress, and we must continue to draw a distinction between legitimate research and commercial exploitation. We need to challenge hype and maintain hope. Thank you.
Megan Munsey, maintaining hope for the new cell science while helping to make sure we know exactly what we're hoping for. She's Head of Education, Ethics and Community Awareness at Stem Cells Australia in Melbourne. Next week, Roger Rees from Adelaide on how we repair broken brains and spinal cords. One of the great challenges still in modern medicine. I'm Robin Williams.